नमो भगवते वसुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वसुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वसुदेवाय सा हरि इदं भगवान् शक्त्या स कल्विदं भगवान् कालशक्त्या स कल्विदं भगवान् कालशक्त्या गुणा प्रवाहेन विभक्ता वीर्या गुणा प्रवाहेन विभक्तवीर्या प्रवाहेन विभक्तवीर्या स कल्विदं भगवान् कलाशक्त्या गुणा प्रवाहेन विभक्तवीर्या करोति अकातैव निहन्ति अहंता करोत्यकातैव निहन्त्यहन्ता करोत्यकातैव निहन्त्यहन्ता चेष्टा विभुम्ना खलु दुर्विभाव्या चेष्टा विभुम्ना खलु दुर्विभाव्या चेष्टा विभुम्ना खलु दुर्विभाव्या करोत्यकर्तैव निहन्त्यहन्ता चेष्टा विभुम्ना खलु दुर्विभाव्या स कल्विदं भगवान् कालशक्त्या गुणा प्रवाहेन विभक्तवीर्या करोत्यकर्तैव निहन्त्यहन्ता चेष्टा विभुम्ना खलु दुर्विभाव्या स कल्विदं भगवान् कालशक्त्या गुणा प्रवाहेन विभक्तवीर्या करोत्यकर्तैव निहन्त्यहन्ता चेष्टा विभुम्ना खलु दुर्विभाव्या
Yeah.
sa
di
kalu
however
idam this universe
bhagavan
the personality of Godhead
kala
of time
shaktya
by the force
guna pravahena
by the interaction of the modes of nature.
Vibhakta,
divided.
Virya,
whose potencies.
Karoti,
acts upon.
Akarta,
the non-doer.
Eva,
although.
Nihanti,
kills.
Ahanta,
non-killer.
Chesta,
the energy.
Vibhumna,
of the Lord.
Kalu,
certainly.
Duruvibhavya,
inconceivable. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead by His inconceivable supreme energy, time, causes the interaction of the three modes of material nature, and thus varieties of energy become manifest. It appears that He is acting, but He is not the actor. He is killing, but He is not the killer. Thus it is understood that only by His inconceivable power is everything happening. Responsively, please. The Supreme Personality of Godhead. By His inconceivable supreme energy, time, causes the interaction of the three modes of material nature. And thus varieties of energy become manifest. It appears that He is acting, but He is not the actor.
He is killing,
but He is not the killer. Thus it is understood that only by His inconceivable power is everything happening. So this story is continuing, and here in this section here there's 10 verses starting with verse 15 going through to verse 24. Where Manu is pointing out to his grandson Dhruva, he's actually explaining the situation or the state of things as Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, or he says the nature of things. And we see how Swayambhuva Manu is actually going through a process of convincing Dhruva not to fight or not to continue killing the Yakshas. And here in this section, these 10 verses, he's actually saying how everything's going on by the arrangement of Krishna. And then in the 24th verse, he points out that actually Krishna killed your brother. It wasn't the Yakshas at all. And then in the verse after that, he explains, but actually he's not to blame because he has no false ego and he's not attached. And it's kind of an interesting, this whole story is a very interesting evolution because we go back to the beginning of this story of three chapters ago where Dhruva Maharaj, when he's a five-year-old boy, how he saw his brother Uttam sitting on the lap of his father, and within him arose this desire that I'd also like to sit on the lap of my father. So then he went to sit on, as we know, he went to sit on his father's lap, and his father pushed him off, and then his stepmother Saruchi, the mother of Uttam, said some harsh words to him. And his nature being a Kshatriya, he then became very incensed by that. He felt insulted, actually, and he decided he would go to the forest on the instructions of his own mother, Suniti, I think was her name. And thereby he, you know, at the age of five, he had the determination, he meditated upon, you know, under the instructions of Narada Muni, he meditated upon the Supreme Personality of God and actually got the darshan of the Lord. So it's interesting that the very two persons that he was insulted by and disrespected by, when they were killed by the Yakshas, he then decided to avenge that death. So Prabhupada points out in a purport earlier on this chapter that, you know, this anger is not out of place in a devotee. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he points out that Dhruva was actually acting out of duty because he wanted to show the citizens and just the people in general that, you know, he was acting properly because, you know, a member of the royal family has been killed. Now he could have just, well, you know, they caused me so much grief, so I just won't worry about it. You know, that's good riddance to them, kind of thing, because of the insult they gave to me. But Dhruva is a person of quality. He's not just an ordinary person. We see in this material world, you know, that someone upsets me, you know, and it's quite common, at least in some countries in the world, you pull a gun out and shoot them. You know, it's not uncommon. Anyone who reads the headlines can see things like this all the time happening. But, you know, Dhruva is not of that nature, not of that quality. He has a great lineage. He comes, you know, like Swayambhuva Manu is his grandfather, great personality, coming directly from Brahma. So he's, you know, because he's coming in such a bloodline, he's possessing great qualities. So he, rather than just acting based on his emotions, he acts out of duty. Quite common in this day and age that people, because they're absorbed, particularly in the mode of passion and ignorance, they tend to act from emotion rather than duty. We see with a great personality, and this is discussed in the Gita also, about how a person of quality will act out of duty rather than just acting according to their emotions. Of course, I'm not talking about transcendental emotions here, I'm talking about material emotions. Transcendental emotions is a different discussion. But then out of duty, he's, you know, a member of the royal family who's been killed, therefore it is his duty to, you know, act as the way he's acting now. But then, so it's sort of come that, you know, and it's also interesting that describes in I think it was in the previous chapter, how there was 130 yakshas and he just went to them single-handedly and he's taking on 130,000 yakshas and winning, which is quite extraordinary when you think of it. You know, it's like in this day and age, the only way you could do that is to take on 130,000 people is with a plane and an atomic bomb or something, or, you know, a missile and an atomic bomb. But he's just taking on and very, very powerfully fighting against them. And you know, there's a bit of discussion about the nature of a kshatriya and how when the yakshas are becoming overwhelmed, and like generally people would all just run away and think, well, this is too scary for me. But the yakshas are impressed and they're applauding Dhruva and they think, wow, this is amazing. And then with renewed vigor, they attack him. And the same with him, you know, he's covered by arrows and he's disappeared and the demigods are sort of, oh no, he's defeated and that. And then Prabhupada uses an interesting analogy of how, just like when the mountain is covered by rain clouds and the it appears like the mountain has disappeared, but actually all the dirty things are washed off the mountain. So in the same way, this analogy is used to say that the shower of arrows has washed away all Dhruva Maharaj's impurities, and he just emerges from the arrows with renewed vigor in the fight. And then it goes on, and it gets to the point now where Dhruva is actually practically exterminating the race of the yakshas, and then Manu's becoming concerned that he's going to insult Kuvera and Lord Shiva, because, you know, they're relatives of Kuvera and they're followers of Lord Shiva. So now he's coming down and he's intervening. He's saying, okay, this is enough. You've avenged it. And actually only one of the yakshas acted improperly. Why do you need to wipe out the whole race? And then he's using various means, as we can see here. He's actually pointing out to Dhruva the nature of things, actually how things are going on. And he's saying, but you should understand all these things, because you're coming from a high birth. And we can see that Dhruva, as I mentioned before, when he was 5 years old, he actually realized the Supreme Personality of God. He saw him face to face. So we can understand that his nature is great. And Manu points out, I think it's about verse 9, he says, you know, you've actually proved your point here. You've shown everyone you're acting out of duty. Okay, that's enough. You don't need to continue. And then he goes on to point out in a few verses time how, you know, all this, like I said, these 10 verses here, he's pointing out the way things that happen in the world, actually how everything's going on by the arrangement of the Lord. that actually this is, this, you know, the yaksha didn't kill your brother and mother. It's actually come about by the arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, you know, so no one's acted improperly here. No one's acted out of false ego, etc. like that. So there's no need for you to continue. And then he'll go on to explain, you know, how you should surrender to Krishna. Just take shelter of Krishna, as you did when you were a young boy. So he's just kind of reinforcing, you know, the lessons he's already learned. And then finally he instructs him to go make your peace with Kavera, because he's been offended by this. Because, you know, these are Kavera's family members. The same way that Dhruva became very upset when his brother was killed. Now Dhruva Maharaj has practically wiped out all of Kavera's descendants, so obviously he's going to be upset about that. So I'll read some of Srila Prabhupada's purport. The word Durvibhavya means inconceivable by our tiny brain. And Vibhakti Virya means divided in varieties of potencies. This is the right explanation of the display of creative energies in the material world. We can better understand the mercy of God by an example. A government state is always supposed to be merciful, but sometimes, in order to keep law and order, the government employs its police force, and thus punishment is meted out to the rebellious citizens. Similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always merciful and full of transcendental qualities. But certain individual souls have forgotten their relationship with Krishna and have endeavored to lord it over material nature. As a result of their endeavor, they are involved in varieties of material interaction. It is incorrect to argue, however, that because energy issues from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is the actor. In the previous verse, the word nimittamatram indicates that the Supreme Lord is completely aloof from the action and reaction of this material world. How is everything being done? The word inconceivable has been used. It is not within the power of one's small brain to comprehend. Unless one accepts the inconceivable power and energy of the Lord, one cannot make any progress. The forces which are certainly set up by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he is always aloof from their action and reaction. The varieties of energies produced by the interaction of material nature produce the varieties of species of life and their resultant happiness and unhappiness. So Prabhupada is emphasizing here these words inconceivable and divided in varieties of potencies. And as we understand, it says Parashya Shakti Vividhaya Shriyate, that the Lord has so many varieties of potencies and they're acting in so many different ways. Yet the living entity who's conditioned by the material nature cannot understand this. We can see the example of the scientists. They're trying to analyze the workings of the material nature and come to a conclusion about how it has all come about. And the best they've done to date is, you know, this theory of the Big Bang theory. You know, it all came from a cloud of gas. You know, like once upon a time there's a cloud of gas. You know, it kind of sounds a little bit like a fairy tale. You know, starts off once upon a time. But actually, they may be, you know, understanding so many things here in this world, but they actually cannot understand the source of everything. And Prabhupada points out in this purport that, you know, it's not within the power of one's tiny brain. Oftentimes you would use this phrase, you know, your tiny pea-like brain. You cannot understand these things. And it's the fact that even Krishna's material nature, you know, just completely refutes this theory of evolution with a few simple things. I was talking about this little, I don't know, bug or something, tiny little thing, which has got a hair-like filament that comes out the back of its body, and it's sort of spiral-shaped, and it goes round and round like a propeller. And somehow or other, this living entity is actually, there's a bearing, like an organic bearing, where this propeller goes, and it's got this motor mechanism there. And the people who are analysing this thing, it says this couldn't have possibly come about by evolution. And they're I don't remember all the details, it's not particularly scientific, but they were pointing out how this possibly could not have possibly come about by evolution. So just, you know, and they were using many, many different examples like that, how all these things are actually designed to be like, just like, you know, when you design a boat, and you put a motor in it, you put a propeller shaft in it. It couldn't have possibly have happened like that. It was designed to be like that. So, you know, we can see that actually the Supreme Lord, by his inconceivable potency, he's actually created everything. And it functions in a particular way. Nothing defies the laws of nature. There's nothing here that defies the laws of nature. But in their management, there's so many things that defies the laws of the government. I mean, just look at the country we're in. Half the country is defying the laws of the government. They're just doing their own thing. How many people in this country have a driver's license? I mean, because there's a big discussion going on right now about, you know, what's a safe way to get from Calcutta to Mayapur, because, you know, there's so many things that happen, you know, like this thing on the road and people in cars and stuff, you know. It's like, it's a terrorizing experience driving on the road here, you know. So, I mean, you just look at material arrangement and it's just so defective, it's so incompetent. But Krishna's arrangement is perfect. And how it goes about, Prabhupada's saying here, and is saying in the verse, is inconceivable. They cannot understand this. Therefore, if one accepts the inconceivable nature of Krishna, the inconceivable potencies of Krishna, then we can understand how these things are going on. It's by Krishna's arrangement. We just, you know, we just accept that it's going on like that. Another example given is that the electric powerhouse is situated in one place, but by its energies, many different types of machinery move. The production is never identical with the original source of the energy, but the original source of the energy, being the prime factor, is simultaneously one with and different from the product. So another nice analogy Prabhupada is giving is like, you know, there's a powerhouse producing so much energy and it's being channeled all over by you know, transmission wires, etc. like that. Yet we see all these things and we see we have, you know, the sound is coming from this by electricity, there's lights, there's fans. Although I hope I don't turn that fan on because the light will go shooting off. Yet there's so many things going on by the utilization of this energy. And no matter how big the power cable you have coming here into Mayapur, the product or what you see, the manifestation, is never the same as the powerhouse, because the powerhouse has huge volumes of energy. So in the same way, Prabhupada is using this analogy to show that even though there may be so many wonderful manifestations of Krishna's energy, sometimes very frightening manifestations of Krishna's energy, just like, you know, several years ago there was that tsunami that swept right throughout the you know, the eastern side of India and down through into